Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymeer Church of Christ.
Reading this morning is taken from John chapter 20, verses 11 through 18. John chapter 20, verses 11 through 18. And I'll be reading from the New King James Version. But Mary stood outside by the tomb weeping, and as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet where the body of Jesus had lain. Then they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" She, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." And she turned and said to him, "Rabboni," which is to say, "Teacher." Jesus said to her, "Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father, but go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father and to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord and that he had spoken these things to her.
As we continue our series looking through the life of Jesus in the Master Works, we will be spending our time in John chapter 20. But before we do that, just a reminder, all year long we've thought about the theme of being here to serve. And each month we've looked at a different verse that we've tried to repeat and put in our minds to sort of carry with us through that month. This is the one we began with, and I thought it would be fitting for us as we close out the year to be reminded of this, sort of the model verse as we think about our call to serve. This is Mark 10:45. If you would, let's all say this together. "For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." And so that sets an incredible example for us in our own service. If you spend time swimming, especially if you're near the surface, you know what it's like to be outdoors, maybe on a lake, maybe even in a beach, in an ocean setting, and to be near the top when the sun is shining bright. The sun shines down on the water, and even if you were to put on some goggles, maybe you were going to snorkel a little bit, and you go down just a few feet or two, and you still see that sunlight shining through the surface. It illuminates some of the fish that might be swimming around in the shallow areas, maybe some of the plant life that you can see there. There's a certain kind of feeling you get when you're near the surface of the water. But as you know, the deeper you get into water, if you dive into deep water, to deep territory, things begin to look a little bit differently. In fact, if you go into deep water, even deeper down than we can swim ourselves, if you were to get in a submarine and to go someplace like the Mariana Trench and the Pacific Ocean floor would plummet at nearly 7 miles. And if you were to get in a submarine and to go miles down into the depths of the Pacific, things would look very different. It would be hard to see any light. In fact, the sunlight that made the water that pretty blue color all of a sudden goes away, and it's like you're looking around in darkness in the middle of the night. It's hard to see anything. Now, if you are at the top of the Mariana Trench, it probably looks light and blue and beautiful on the surface, but if you go miles down, it's a completely different story. What has changed? The sun is still in the same place. The sun is still shining light in the same ways. But now there's something between you and that sunlight. There are miles and miles of water, and that changes perspective. I bring that up because there are times in life when it seems easy to see God. It seems easy to see the way God is acting in our lives. It seems easy to see blessings that come from the giver of every good and perfect gift. And so I can look around in my life and I can say, these things are happening, and isn't this wonderful, and isn't this great, and things are bright and blue and there's sunlight coming down. But then there are other times when it's not bright and blue and it's not pretty outside and I don't see any light and things seem very, very dark. I think we understand the difference between those times in our lives. And probably in this auditorium this morning, we have people who are in both of those times. Times when it's easy to see the sunlight, and others who are experiencing that kind of time of darkness where there's a barrier between you and the light. The sunlight hasn't moved, the sunlight hasn't changed, but it's just harder to see. If we live long lives, we'll experience both of those things. Even looking around as a society, there's a lot of darkness around us that can make it very difficult to focus on God. When we think about attacks that have taken place in other countries, in our own country, when we think about violence that's around us, when we look at the tragedies that take place in the lives of people we care about, it's very easy to be overwhelmed with that darkness. And I bring that up because I want us to remember at the time Mary Magdalene encounters Jesus, it's a time of darkness. And so if we're wondering if anyone else can relate to those times where it's hard to see the light and there are things between us and the sun and it's hard to see God working, the apostles can relate to this time. Mary Magdalene, the other ladies who were disciples of Jesus and coming early to care for the body can relate to this time. The time when nothing seems to make sense and the world is completely overwhelmed with darkness. Now, there was actual physical darkness during the crucifixion of Jesus, but I'm thinking more of spiritual darkness. When apostles, after Jesus' crucifixion, are hiding behind locked doors, they've run for their lives when Jesus was betrayed. And while there were women there who were faithful and who were wanting to serve and wanting to be the kind of faithful individuals that would care for Jesus' body, they still were confused. And so we wonder what it's like when darkness is around us. We've sung all morning about the resurrection of Jesus. We've just read about the resurrection of Jesus. I want to encourage us this morning to allow that resurrection to be the beam of light that penetrates the darkness around us, wherever we are in life. And let's consider what happens when Jesus encounters two individuals in John chapter 20. The first we've read about, Mary Magdalene, and the second is Thomas, one of his apostles. We're going to see that each one of these has to give Jesus a second look. They have to give him a second glance to see who this really is. It's not unusual for Jesus' resurrection appearances to take a second look. On the road to Emmaus, Jesus walks with two disciples and keeps them from knowing who he is until they're sitting around a table at a meal with him and then their eyes are opened. And here we see Mary Magdalene struggling with that same sort of second look. So let's give the resurrection a second look this morning and allow that to help us pierce the darkness. As we've been doing all throughout the series, we've looked at works of art that represent some of these moments where artists have tried to capture the power of different sections of the life of Jesus. This is Rembrandt's rendering of what Mary Magdalene would have seen as she's at the tomb. You see the angels that are there. Again, that's they have sort of the usual features you would expect to see an angel, sort of to signal the viewer, these are angels that are here. If you'll notice, Jesus has a hat on, and he's holding a gardening tool. Obviously, the text doesn't tell us that Jesus had either of those things, but Rembrandt's trying to sort of take some liberties to communicate that she thought he was a gardener and trying to illustrate this time. And so we understand the text doesn't say that's there, but it is an interesting reminder of her confusion. And then in the back, again, we see light as it plays an important role in so many works of art. This was early in the morning, the text tells us, in John chapter 20, but it's also the dawn of a new era. And so as we reflect on what it was that Mary did as she asked Jesus these questions, as she was looking for his body, I think it's helpful for us to ask a couple of questions. Number one, what is it that Mary wanted? What did she come to the tomb looking for? If you look at the beginning of John chapter 20, we find out that the first day of the week she came in verse 1 while it was still dark, and that's when she saw the stone already taken away from the tomb. If we look at other gospel accounts, we see that Mary wasn't the only one of the faithful women who were disciples of Jesus that was there. And so she runs and she comes to Simon Peter, the other disciple whom Jesus loved. And when we're reading through John's gospel, that seems to be the way John speaks about himself. And so we have Peter and John here that run to the tomb. And so they go. The other disciple ran faster than Peter. So John gives us just a little bit of a detail that he got there first. But he stopped and looked in, and he saw the linen wrappings in verse 5 lying there. And then in verse 6, when Peter came, he entered the tomb and saw those linen wrappings. And verse 7 tells us something interesting. The face cloth, which had been on the head of Jesus, was not lying with the linen wrappings, but it was rolled up in a place by itself. Almost an indication as to how purposeful this empty tomb was. That this wasn't an accident. This wasn't a group that had stolen Jesus' body and had left all the materials that were there just piled up in whatever state they happened to be when they took the body. This was intentional here. And they look into the tomb, and Peter and John don't exactly know what to make of it. We see in verse 8 that the other disciple who had first come to the tomb, John, also entered. He saw and believed. But then verse 9, as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. So the disciples went away to their own homes. They went away, but Mary stayed. It seems like the women that came to the tomb with her were not here when Mary is having this specific moment where she encounters Jesus. And what was she searching for? She was searching for his body. She was searching for the body of her Savior, to do what would have been seen as something honorable there. She had come early and then realized that body is gone and come to the next conclusion that most of us would have come to, which is someone has taken it. So she's looking for the body. She's looking for the one who had been crucified. And that's when she encounters Jesus. It might seem strange for us that she thinks he's a gardener, but remember, this is a garden tomb. Who else would have been there? Who else would have been there so early in the morning? Wouldn't it be someone who is taking care of the garden? And so she asks again that question. Just tell me where you've taken him. Just tell me where you've put him. And you can almost hear in her voice the urgency. I think that's because Mary's life had been changed by Jesus. Luke's gospel tells us that Mary Magdalene had 7 demons cast out of her by Jesus. And that from that point on, she began to follow him. She even financially supported his ministry. And so when she gets to this point, and Jesus has been crucified, and the one who made this incredible change in her life is now gone, and now his body's not even here, can you even hear the panic and the urgency in her voice? But notice what happened when Jesus spoke her name. He said, Mary. And she gave that second look and realized it was him. In John chapter 10, Jesus would describe the shepherd whose sheep know his voice. And that seems to be what's happening here. Mary understood when Jesus said, Mary, who he was. Boy, there's something powerful there, isn't there? When he called her voice, she recognized him. She uses that word, rabbani, a variation of that word rabbi, meaning teacher. And later she would describe him as her Lord. She came searching for the body of Jesus. She came searching for who had taken it. But that wasn't exactly what Jesus wanted for her to do. We know what Mary wanted, but what did Jesus want? What did he tell Mary that she needed? He told her, first of all, she needed to understand his mission. And there's this statement that we read where he tells her not to touch him. And that may seem like a strange statement for Jesus to make. Because we know that when Jesus appeared after his resurrection, he had a tangible body. It wasn't an earthly body, but it was still physical in the sense that he would go and eat with his apostles later. He wasn't a ghost or an apparition that was standing in front of her. And so it wasn't that he didn't want to touch her to touch him because she wouldn't be able to actually feel the hands that he had. And later, as he would describe to Thomas, the scars that he had. But the wording there could indicate a clinging. And I think it's good for us to understand this is, don't cling to me. Don't hold on to me. Can you imagine how overjoyed she would have been to see this is Jesus? You can picture her giving him a hug and holding on and wanting to just grasp on to him and trying to understand everything that's happening. And Jesus says, don't cling to me. I have a mission. He wanted Mary to understand his mission. Sometimes we think about the death, burial, and resurrection and forget about the ascension. But Jesus says, I've got a mission. I'm going to ascend to the Father. And I have a mission for you. I need you to go and tell the apostles what has happened. And so he wanted her to understand his mission and to spread that message. She would go tell Jesus' disciples what she had seen and what his plan was. And it may seem unlikely, but Mary Magdalene becomes the first person to go around and talk about the risen Jesus. She goes to the apostles and tells them. He entrusts her with that mission. Someone who had been demon-possessed. And at the beginning of her story, we might not have thought she would ever be used in this way, but Jesus uses her in a powerful way. Incidentally, I think it's a reminder that this was not a made-up story, because if you were living in the first century, in that setting, the testimony of women that was there would not have been testimony that was highly regarded. It wasn't something that would have been a very good witness statement. Not to say that was right, that's just the way that it was. And so it would have been kind of embarrassing for the apostles that it was the women who first found out about Jesus being raised from the dead. If they'd been making up a story, they probably wouldn't have included that detail, but it really happened, and so it is in here. And we don't have specific insight into her emotions, but it seems to me, if we're asking the question, how did Mary react? How did she respond? It seems that she responded with joy. Now, it doesn't specifically tell us that, but just judging from her excitement at seeing her Savior, you have to imagine that she didn't just walk slowly back to the apostles, that she ran to them, that she wanted so badly to tell them this message. And later in the chapter, Jesus appears to his apostles, except for one of them. They're still referred to as the 12, even though Judas is no longer with him. But Thomas isn't with this group. And so Thomas isn't with the 11 that were there. And so they see Jesus, Thomas comes, and we have a passage that is probably most closely identified with Thomas, more so than any other passage. And here's what happens when the disciples tell him they've seen the Lord in verse 25. He said to them, "Unless I see in his hands the imprint of the nails, and put my finger into the place of the nails, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." That's probably the statement most closely associated with Thomas in our minds. Doubting Thomas. Unless I see it, I won't believe it. So when we come to Thomas, what did Thomas want? Thomas wanted verification. And I want to just pause right here and ask the question, where did he come up with these things he wanted to see? Where did he come up with this list? You know, Thomas didn't just make this out of thin air. Thomas wasn't saying, well, unless I see this and this, I'm not going to believe. Thomas is responding likely to what they told him happened in verse 20. Because in verse 20, when Jesus appeared to them, he showed them both his hands and his side. The disciples then rejoiced when they saw the Lord. So they tell Thomas about it. And don't you know, they said, he showed us his hands and his side. And Thomas says, you know, before I believe, I'm going to have to see what you saw. All Thomas was asking for was what all the other apostles got to see. I think we are pretty hard on Thomas. But he was asking for what they had seen. I mean, after all, when Peter and John saw the empty tomb, they didn't immediately understand and immediately believe. It took an appearance of Jesus before they really understood what was happening. And that was all Thomas was asking for. And so before I'm too hard on Thomas, I need to ask myself, how would I have responded in that situation? What would I have been looking for? And so then after he makes this statement, we read in verse 26, after 8 days, his disciples were again inside, and Thomas with them. Jesus came, and the doors having been shut, and stood in their midst, and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Reach here with your finger, and see my hands, and reach here your hand, and put it into my side, and do not be unbelieving, but believing." Thomas answered and said to him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are they who did not see me, and yet believe." Thomas felt like he knew what he needed. But what's interesting to me is in that passage we just read, when Jesus invites Thomas to do what Thomas had said he wanted to do, which was to feel the nail prints and to see in Jesus' side and to touch his side where he'd been pierced, the text doesn't say that Thomas actually did that. The text says he saw that and says, my Lord and my God. Thomas may have, we don't know, but it seems to me that the indication is when Thomas saw him, that was enough. Thomas might have thought he needed something, but Jesus had something else in mind for Thomas to need. Jesus says, do not be unbelieving, but believing. Change the attitude that you'd had, which was unbelieving, and believe. And again, we need to realize with Thomas, he had shown faith up until this point. In fact, he'd shown quite remarkable faith in certain places. Not only was he one of the 12 that was a follower of Jesus, even when times were very difficult, in John chapter 11, when Jesus is going to go back to Mary and Martha's home to raise Lazarus, and they're worried because there are people in that area who would seek to put Jesus to death, Thomas says to all of the other disciples, let us go also that we may die with him. If Jesus is going to die, I'm going to die with him. Now, I don't know this, but I would imagine if I were Thomas and I wanted to choose one verse of the New Testament that people would associate with me, don't you think Thomas would have voted for this one? I mean, doesn't this seem... He'd be Thomas the Courageous. I was willing to go and die for him. And he was also concerned in John chapter 14 when Jesus starts talking about the way. Thomas is the one who interrupts him with that question. He says, we don't know where you're going. How would we know the way? He was concerned with wanting to do what Jesus wanted to do. And I have a hunch that when he asked that question, he was probably doing what happens a lot of times in classrooms where one person asks a question and you think, I'm glad he asked that because I didn't know what the teacher was talking about. I think there were likely other apostles that were saying, I'm glad Thomas asked that question because I wasn't sure what Jesus meant. And so Thomas had displayed faith, but Jesus reminds us that it's not just a faith of being willing to be identified with Jesus. Even a faith that says we want to do what Jesus wants us to do, we have to have faith in the resurrected Lord. In the fact that the one who came and died and was raised from the dead offers resurrection to us. It's one thing to agree in my mind that God exists. It's another thing to say Jesus is the Son of God. But until that faith transforms the way I live, I don't have the kind of faith Jesus calls for here. So how does Thomas respond? Jesus tells him what he needs. He needs to stop disbelieving. He needs to stop his unbelief. Thomas responds by saying, my Lord and my God. It's an interesting bookend for John's Gospel because at the beginning of the Gospel of John, he tells us the Word became flesh. Not only that, but in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John begins by saying, God was made flesh. And Thomas says, my Lord and my God. I understand you're not just a master here on earth. You're not just a Lord that I serve. You are my God, your divinity. And so you see these bookends in John. In fact, in John 5:23, Jesus stated that all should honor the Son just as they honor the Father. And that's what Thomas is doing. He's honoring Jesus as God's Son. Jesus tells him, you've seen and believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe. And here's where I think we see something really interesting. Look at the next couple of verses in John chapter 20, verse 30 and 31. Now, we usually think about these and sort of forget about the context. But in John 30, we have, therefore, many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these have been written. Why did John write these things? So that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. Jesus says, blessed are those who haven't seen and yet believe. And John says, that's why I'm writing to you. I want you to believe. Through inspiration, John is reminding us that he's fulfilling the message Jesus had. And so it really gives us this incredible moment where it's almost as if John is narrating this event and he's telling us what happened. And we can see Jesus talking to Thomas. And Jesus tells Thomas, those people who haven't seen and believed are going to be blessed. And it's almost as if John turns to the audience and says, that's why I'm writing this to you. I want you to be blessed. I want you to believe. It's pretty powerful to see what happens. and a couple of second looks at Jesus. The first was a second look because Mary didn't recognize him the first time she saw him. The second was a second look because Thomas wasn't there the first time. And so we ask ourselves the question, what is it we're looking for? What is it we want? I don't know how many times we see in the Gospels people who come to Jesus with something specific in mind, but leave with more than they bargained for. Maybe they don't know exactly what they want or exactly what they're asking for, and Jesus corrects them and sets them on a different course. I wonder, if I reflect on what I want, are there times when I come to Jesus with my idea of what I want and He needs to tell me something else? Can you think of a time like that in your own life? When you had things pretty well mapped out and you knew exactly what was going to happen and yet that wasn't really what happened in your life? How many times do I come to God in prayer and say, I've already determined how my life is going to chart out here. I'm just praying that You'll bless the decisions I've already made. It's easy for us to have in mind the things that we want when we come to Jesus, but that's not always what happens. Maybe there's a specific job that we think, this is going to be my job, this is going to be it, and that doesn't happen. Or maybe there's a specific place we're going to live that's going to be the next step for us and for our family, but that doesn't happen. Or maybe we have specific plans, what I'm going to do with my life, but my life doesn't take that course. So what am I going to do if God has something else in mind? I think this morning these passages remind us, among other things, to reflect on what Jesus said to Mary and what He said to Thomas. Like Mary Magdalene, we're called to spread the Word of God, to understand His mission and to spread that message. And I think we could also go so far as to say, Mary gives us a model of excitement and joy in doing that. What is it that we get really excited about? What are we really joyful when we speak about? What are some things that put smiles on our faces? You know, when you're driving down the road and you're listening to talk radio, what are the things that people get really fired up about talking about? When you're scrolling through social media, looking through your timelines and in your feeds of social media, what are people really fired up about? What are they saying? What articles are they pointing you to? What information are they wanting to share with others? We tend to share things we're really excited about. We tend to share pictures of things we're really excited about. If you have a new child in your family, chances are you've got pictures, either on your phone or things you want to email people. You want to tell them about what has just happened. We'd love to communicate things we're excited about. And I think it's worth asking, am I excited enough about the risen Savior that I'm sharing that message with others? If people were just to look at what I've talked about over the last week, 2 weeks of my life, if you were just to get a transcript about things I discuss and things I talk about and things I'm passionate about, and you were just to put every conversation and every email I've had and every lunchtime chat that I've had with somebody, and you were just to lay it all down there, looking at that, what would people say was important to me? What would people say I was excited about? I have to admit, that's a challenging question for me. Because I could probably think of a lot of things on that list that I'm easily excited about and passionate about, but might not be all that important. So I wonder, proportionally, where does the gospel fit there? Where does the message of Jesus fit there? Where does dedication to serving His church fit there? It's a challenging question. If we don't have joy in telling others about Jesus, if we're not passionate about that, I think people can tell. But if we are passionate, if they can see that there's a real difference that's been made in our life, people can tell that too. And so we're called to share His message like Mary. I think we're also called to cultivate real faith, authentic faith in Jesus, a faith that changes our lives. And so it's not enough just to say, well, in my mind, I believe that Jesus exists, and I'm even willing to be identified with Jesus, and I'll even do good things for Jesus. There's more to it than that. There's a living faith that transforms every aspect of our life. And so it's not enough just to do a few good things and say, sure, I'll identify with this group of people who believe in Jesus. I've got to have a faith that drives every decision that I make, a faith that guides me. And that is the kind of faith that will promise me a resurrection. similar to the one we see in Jesus. There's a powerful story told about a well-known Puritan years ago named John Owen, who was on his deathbed, and his secretary was writing a letter to his friend on his behalf. And he makes this statement. He told her to write, "I'm still in the land of the living," referring to the fact that even though he was in bad shape, he was still alive. But then he paused. He said, "Stop. Change that and say, I am yet in the land of the dying, but I hope soon to be in the land of the living." I think that's a significant statement. Because of the resurrection, because of the light that shines through the darkness, that shone through in John chapter 20, and that shines through the darkness of our life, no matter how many miles deep down we might be, where sunlight can't reach us, the light of the gospel can reach us there. And we can be reminded that right now we're in the land that's temporary, but there is a land of the living that's promised to those who will allow the resurrection to change their life. And so this morning, if you need to decide to have a faith, a real faith, the kind of faith God calls us to have in John chapter 20, it begins by turning your life around, by confessing Jesus as Lord, and by deciding to live differently, putting Christ on in baptism, and living a life that is fueled by a desire to tell others about Jesus. But maybe that there's another issue that's come up. Maybe you feel like you can't see light anywhere around you right now, and you just need encouragement and prayers and friends who can lift you up. If we can help you, please come as we stand and as we all worship together.